I really do appreciate all the support that you have been providing, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
This Thursday, September 17th at 10 p.m. on Folk Radio, we take another deep dive into Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music, an iconic collection of 84 songs which were recorded in the late 20s and early 30s, largely forgotten long before they were re-released by Folkways Records in 1952 on the new LP format. And that introduced new generations to them and played a key role in launching the folk music revival of the 50s and 60s. On Folk Radio, this Thursday, 10 p.m. to midnight on WBAI and streaming at WBAI.org.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Economic Update with Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up at the 7 p.m. hour, followed by Exploration with Michio Kaku at 8 p.m. Once again, this is your listener-sponsored community radio station, and if you appreciate what WBAI brings to the table on a daily basis, please consider becoming a financial supporter to this radio station by calling 516-620-3602 or go to give to WBAI.org online. That's 516-620-3602 or go to give to the number 2, WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
And you are listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's 7 o'clock, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, it's fake and worse. I hope that's understood, but maybe no.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here.
And we're getting no levels. Why is that?
Make sure that this is undone, so
okay.
I'm right here.
Well,
sorry
you're
about
fine.
That.
Where am I?
I'm sorry. Where are you?
There I am. Okay. You set a level for me, and it was way too low. Okay.
All right.
And let's bring in our Skype friends. Okay. Rob, are you there? No?
Good evening.
Okay, are you on delay?
Yes.
They seem to be delayed somewhat. No?
I'm responding.
Gila, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
You responded much faster than Rob did.
He was probably he's probably unmuting himself.
Unmuting himself.
As a courteous...
It's a press of a button, Kyle. That's all it is. Doesn't take 5 seconds. Alex, are you there?
I am indeed.
Another long delay. What's up with the delays? I'm impatient. I want to get things
really?
Done.
There's a lot of grievance coming from your direction today.
Okay, let's do this, folks. I'm going to count down. All right, I'm going to go 3, 2, 1. I'm talking to Rob Gila and Alex. I want you all to say one the same time you expect me to say one, okay? Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
One.
You see the delay? That's a long delay. That's going to make it hard to communicate. Why do we have a delay all of a sudden? Huh. All right, Skype, thank you for that. Well, here we are, another edition of Off the Hook, where we explore technology and sometimes have a little bit of fun with it. What have you guys been up to this week? Anything noteworthy?
Yeah. Sorry to jump in like that. I took the subway for the first time in 6 months.
Wow. You know, I haven't taken the subway since March.
Yeah.
So how is...
I hadn't... It was... it's very strange because there's a feeling of, like, being inside a time capsule because none of the ads, none of the posters have changed, so it's all for movies that are opening in February. And mask compliance was better than I thought it was going to be. I was very pleasantly surprised by that. The only person I really saw on the train who didn't have a mask on was a baby. I was willing to let that slide.
Well, that baby might have to pay $50.
I was back in my physical office for the first time since March, and that was incredibly strange. And, you know, the people at the Starbucks where I got my coffee recognized me and remembered me. And that was oddly heartwarming.
They've been there the whole time waiting for you to come back.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. It was honestly better than I thought it was going to be. I was really worried beforehand. I've done it twice since then. It's all good. So that's the big excitement in my life.
It's interesting what you bring up here as far as seeing the compliance. We were talking about this on the other show yesterday, how we went to a college campus we're familiar with. We've been driving around, Kyle and I. And when you see people that are wearing masks, when you go into a place where everybody is following the guidelines, you leave with a sense of pride. You leave with a sense of community, like everybody is looking out for each other. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And the numbers that we have in New York right now prove that this is a good thing, that it works. So I just hope that the rest of the country sees this and they also try and get through this together as a community, because we are all in this together. This is not something we can take sides on. This is science, and we can't debate it. We have to figure out how to get through it. Alex, anything unusual or different? You always have some adventure that's taken place in your life.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been an extraordinarily busy week. And, you know, I'm sort of exhausted, to be honest with you, because we had a lot of movement and an amazingly big win in our word lawsuit for TikTok employees that we filed a couple of weeks ago. The things that really came to a head at the end of last week, I would say almost immediately after our show last week, actually, we had a very aggressive briefing schedule on the temporary restraining order that we sought against the Trump administration for the banishment of TikTok and its effect on TikTok employees, and that it would not allow TikTok to pay their wages and salaries. And coming to work could be considered a federal crime, a conspiracy to avoid the effect of the executive order. So we filed this lawsuit. There was a lot of haranguing going back and forth between us and TikTok and the Department of Justice. On Saturday, we had we received the opposition of the Department of Justice on Thursday evening, our time, at around 8 p.m. And we had until 5 p.m. on Saturday, Pacific time, so 8 p.m. again, our time, to file our opposition papers against the Department of Justice. And that's not a long time. And they hit back at us very hard. It was a good brief. I think our reply brief was even better. And we heard from the Department of Justice on Monday, because oral argument in front of the federal judge who could have issued a restraining order against the Trump administration was scheduled for Tuesday morning. And on Monday afternoon, we got an email from the lawyers representing the United States government, basically conceding every single thing we were asking for on behalf of the TikTok employees.
Wait. You got the Trump administration to concede?
Yes, we did. And you know, nobody believes it. I totally agree. In fact, when we spoke with other lawyers in sort of conferencing this matter and strategizing, they told us that getting a letter like this was going to be damn near impossible from the Department of Justice, because this is so political and because this is going to be handled out of Maine Justice, which is essentially at the direction of Bill Barr. I mean, look, the timing of this is really fascinating, too, because they could have come out at the beginning of our lawsuit when we filed our complaint and said, we're not going to do the things that you think we're going to do with this executive order, and we're not going to prevent you from getting paid or your employees from getting paid. We're not going to interpret the executive order in this way whatsoever. But instead, they waited until we filed our papers for a restraining order. They filed an opposition. We filed a reply. This is not an insignificant amount of work. This is a huge amount of work. And then at the 11th hour, literally on the eve before the judge is going to hear oral argument about this, they were afraid they were going to lose, so they conceded. That's the long and the short of it. That's what happened. And we got every single thing that we were arguing for TikTok employees. They are going to get paid. They're not going to lose their benefits. And the government conceded that it is not going to be a quote-unquote conspiracy for them to try to get paid and continue to go to work. So these are all really, really good things. We think it's a tremendous result here. And we're not going to finish the fight. You know, we don't think that our job is done. Our lawsuit can still proceed, and we would like to reach the larger and broader issue of whether what Trump did by singling out one application, TikTok, in this manner, without a proper evidentiary foundation for a national security threat, is in fact constitutional. So we're still moving forward, and we also want to address the issue of immigrants, H-1B visa holders, who may be ejected from the country or are having their visas slowed down, grinding to a halt, essentially, preventing them from coming into this country and working for TikTok. So our work is substantially finished, but certainly not done.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, when I asked if people had an interesting week, you know, I was going to say I vacuumed, and I thought that was going to be the extent of it. But you're saving democracy and really helping with some major important issues that I think a lot of people will feel the benefits of. Now, TikTok, of course, they're still in the news. I know they turned down an offer from Microsoft. Who is it now that's working with them? Is it Oracle or somebody? Did I get that right?
That's right. Yeah, Oracle seems to be the latest player here. But look, the interesting thing here is that we are viewing what's happening with TikTok only through the lens of the United States press. When you look at what's been going on in China, and you look at the other side of this, this is a deal that appears to be very far from done. Number one was a week and a half ago, China came out with essentially export restrictions, saying that, you know, if there is technology, sophisticated technology, in particular algorithms, social media algorithms that belong to a Chinese company, they cannot be exported outside of China without their approval. The same thing that we do with our U.S. companies and technology that could be considered, let's say, you know, a national security threat if it were to fall into the hands of a foreign adversary. So China is doing the same stuff that we do to us, which means that any deal for the sale of TikTok through ByteDance, the parent Chinese company, would have to have the approval of the Chinese government. And the Chinese press has been pretty clear in saying that Microsoft is certainly off the table, but Oracle is certainly not in when it comes to being a bona fide purchaser just yet. So I think we have to look at this from the lens of the East and the West. And when you see that there is certainly a lot of haze still on the horizon in this picture. But also going back to what you said, Emmanuel, about, you know, it's been a busy week. I'm exhausted, I have to say. And it's not just me. I really want to give a shout out to my partners, John Lovey and Justin Perry, who were really spearheading litigation efforts here and did a huge amount of the writing and the research on this. So it's been a dream team. Plus, we've been working a lot with Mike Godwin, who was actually the first lawyer, I believe, at the EFF. And the EFF filed an amicus brief in our case. And our client is a pretty awesome lawyer who's also a technical person on the security side for TikTok in the United States, too. So it's been an all-star team, not just me.
Well, I'm glad to see you landed on the right side of this issue, because you really are working with good people, and I think you're going to win. I think you really are fighting for democracy here and fairness for workers. And like you said, the fight's not over. It's going to be going on for a while, so this ought to be really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone, please stay tuned. We're just gearing up.
We had some fun today. We released the summer issue of 2600 Magazine in PDF format. Now, yeah, it's September, what, 16th now? We're a bit late. We're a bit late. And, of course, the pandemic had a lot to do with that. Our printer literally had trouble getting paper. The distribution system was completely messed up on many, many levels. Stores were closing. We had no place to ship our magazine. And we honestly did not know we'd make it through the year. Fortunately, the community came through and really helped us out so that we were able to put out this issue, albeit late. But it is out, and we will catch up, and we will get back on schedule. It'll take a while, but we will do it. Today, though, we put out the PDF, and the reason we did that first was because the paper edition is still in the process of being sent, and it's taking longer. We tried to speed it up as much as possible. There are things we don't have control over. So rather than delay everything, we had the Kindle and Nook editions come out on Friday. The PDF version came out today, and we're hoping the printed edition will be shipping later this week or very early next week at the latest. But the interesting thing that happened today, we released the PDF, and many people got their first glimpse of the cover of the summer edition. And I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting this kind of a reaction, but a number of people took great offense and said they were going to cancel their subscriptions and they wanted nothing more to do with us. And wow, of course, that led to a reverse backlash from people who supported what we were doing, what we were saying. And really, you know, I did not think this was going to be so controversial. It's basically a figure of somebody wearing an anonymous mask and a face covering. And they're raising their fist in the air and they have a police shield and they have a sticker that says 8:46. I think we all know what that means. The amount of time George Floyd was had his head, had his neck being held down by a cop, and a sticker for Hope 2020. There's also, if you look in the background, it's kind of on a beach. You see kind of an allusion to Planet of the Apes, where a statue of Lincoln is just kind of sitting there. Now, someone enlighten me. What is controversial about that? We're talking about somebody kneeling, basically somebody with a police shield. So ostensibly, this could be a cop. Somebody kneeling, raising their fist, standing for justice, and calling attention to injustice. Now, when did we ever shy away from doing something like this? And how is it people in our community find this offensive? Anyone?
I have zero explanation. The imagery itself, I'll note the anonymous mask is wearing a mask. It's a mask with a mask on. So it's safe and there's no other people around. So this is a physically distant character. But beyond that, it's a statement, yeah. It's artistic. It has some elements that tell a story and share what is really going on. There's something that is really all around us that's been taking place over the past couple of months. These are kind of normal ways for us to be creative and really present the latest issue. So that was kind of the spirit of it, and it is I think it's a beautiful cover, so it's kind of unusual that it was controversial.
I'm very happy with it, and we have some really terrific covers. But again, it's just the cover. It's not even the contents of what's inside the magazine. People who are outraged by this have not even read the inside of the magazine. So I honestly, I don't get it, unless they simply are opposed to Black Lives Matter altogether, in which case I get it, and it's sad. But we certainly are not going to back down or avoid certain topics. This is something that we all have to confront. We all have to say something about. And if we can't even do that, boy, we're definitely not going to make any progress, Rob.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I'm always kind of entertained by is the shouts every so often that I can't believe 2600 is getting political now. you know, it's for those unfamiliar. I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say that 2600 has always been a political item.
Yeah, I saw a tweet somebody posted earlier that said we were born political, and that's true. We were born political. Yes.
Well, and certainly not shied away from politics and various perspectives and the conflicts therein.
But this is not politics. This is justice. This is human rights. You know, there should be nothing controversial about this.
Well, especially, yeah.
Black Lives Matter. I mean, how is it hard for people to say that? I think that's the whole point, is that there are people who cannot say that or who have to put a big asterisk next to it and say, yeah, they matter, but. No, there's no but. There's no but. That's the statement. That is the statement. So, and the funny thing is, that statement wasn't even spelled out on the front cover. It was simply implied, but even that was too much for some people. Speaking of Twitter, we are accepting hashtag input, I guess is the way to phrase it. If you hashtag off the hook and send it to Twitter, in theory at least, we'll see it, and then we can answer any question you have, or perhaps read a statement if it's something that fits in with what we're talking about. Again, hashtag off the hook on Twitter. Send a message and attach that, and we'll see if it works. Go ahead, Rob.
Yes, if you the best way to get at us on Twitter is to at us, so @ Hacker Radio Show on Twitter. I can monitor the hashtag as well. That just might not be as responsive at the moment.
Well, we told people the hashtag, so we have to monitor that. You can't introduce a whole other name now. You can do that too, but as long as you have the hashtag off the hook, that's what we tweeted about earlier. Go ahead, Alex.
I'm sort of intrigued by this controversy surrounding the cover of the magazine as well, because it just seems to me that a lot of people will accuse one another of being political when they perceive the other person's politics as not matching their own. When, you know, the point of this, I feel like, you know, even though we've been, as Rob rightly pointed out, you know, political in various spheres, we've been political about the issues. We've been political about justice. We've been political about immigration, not necessarily political about promoting, you know, the ideals of the Democratic Party as opposed to the ideals of the Republican Party. If you listen to the show going back to the 90s, you will hear Emanuel railing against Attorney General Janet Reno and President Clinton, and we've given hell to Obama when he deserved it too. So I think for us, it is always about the issues. It's about the effect of the laws, about the effect of politicians' words, regardless of where you stand on the political aisle. If you're on the left, you know, you may be in more agreement with the types of things that we say on this radio or in the magazine than you are if you're on the right. But that does not mean by any stretch of the imagination, and I speak for myself and I think for the rest of us here, that we would never not agree with somebody on the right simply because they're on the right.
Yeah, and I can, minimum of 10 minutes, I will be fiercely disagreeing with somebody on the left about something. So that's just the nature of it all.
I look forward to that.
But the thing is, when we talk about things like this, it's always relevant to our community, to the hacking community, to technology, and this is no exception. The technological world is certainly caught up in all of this. And we're saying that in the cover, the anonymous mask and the reference to hope and all that. So many talks at the Hope Conference were about social justice. It's become more or less our theme. And we are not shying away from that. We never will. And I'm happy to say the vast majority of people get that. But it is disturbing to see that people who were readers of us find that unacceptable. And it just, you know, it's kind of a microcosm, I guess, of the country where people you think you knew suddenly are saying things that you just can't accept. It doesn't make sense, and it's not fair. So anyway, we're always open to dialogue. We always try and treat people well, and I hope that continues. I hope we do a better job of that over the next few weeks, certainly, and into next year. We will certainly see what happens. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I've often said to people, because I consider myself a hacker, that term describes me. I also consider myself an activist, that term describes me. I didn't become a hacker because I was an activist. I became an activist because looking at the world with what I feel is my hacker mindset and my ways of looking at things and seeing how they can be improved, and if the rules governing the system can be circumvented or changed in a constructive way, like, that's part of being a hacker, but it's also part of the way that sees how things are and how we could possibly make them better. And it turns out when you turn that mindset toward society in general, it tends to make one an activist, I guess. Like, the term fits.
All right. I don't know if this Twitter thing is working, because I'm not seeing anything coming across on the hashtag. And last time we did this, we didn't see things till after the show. So, again, hashtag off the hook, one word. See if it works. We can at least just send a test or something. It's another way of feeding back to us. Our email address, oth@2600.com. We have a couple of letters. We'll get to those in a bit. But I wanted to also mention some of the things that have been going on. This is really a fascinating story. There's a viral phishing scheme that's targeting people across the country with scammy text messages. Nothing new there. But these ones are claiming to be from the United States Postal Service. And get this, QAnon conspiracy theorists have jumped into the fray, falsely claiming that these scammy text messages, ostensibly from USPS, are tied to human trafficking. Yeah, now there's no evidence, of course, to suggest any of this is true. The rumor spread on, guess what, Facebook and Instagram, echoing the Wayfair conspiracy theory that went viral earlier this summer. And unlike the Wayfair conspiracy, however, the USPS myth is obfuscating a real phishing threat. It gets really kind of complicated here. Basically, the scam involves text messages that claim to have information about a USPS delivery. And to find out more, people have to click on a link. Now, on Twitter, security researcher Eric Allison said the link goes to the domain m9sxv.info. which then redirects to jtusd.rdtk.io. And, of course, many of us use jtusd.rdtk.io. Don't you, Kyle? You look baffled. jtusd.rdtk. I can't say it. Yeah, that site. No, it's obviously, if you go to a site that looks like that, there's something weird going on. And the goal, he theorized, was to steal people's credentials, as it always seems to be. Now, at a moment when USPS is facing a very real crisis in the form of budget cuts from the Trump administration, this kind of a rumor about them being involved in human trafficking is about the last thing the country needs. It saps support from a beleaguered agency and makes it difficult for those tasked with stopping human trafficking to do their jobs. But there is a bright spot, and it's that this rumor from QAnon might actually stop people from clicking on the link. So they won't click on the link from the scammy text message from the Postal Service, which is trafficking human beings and preventing a phishing scam. It's so complicated and convoluted and crazy.
Wait, is that like conspiracy theories as emergency alert?
Well, yeah, but for the wrong reasons. I'm okay. Sure that's not what they're trying to do.
Wow.
But thanks to The Verge for this story. Were you guys able to keep up out there in Skype land?
Oh yeah, it all makes perfect sense to me.
Well, in this day and age, it does. It really does. But social media, you know, I think the theme is that social media is poison, and it's really demonstrating that. Alex, you had something?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that these could be so quickly and easily amplified by social media platforms, it just illustrates a very big, glaring problem that we've known about for the last 4 years. And as we head into a presidential election less than 50 days away here, you know, we've got this gigantic problem when it comes to misinformation and platforms not really able to handle or address or tackle this issue head on whatsoever. You know, it's such a crazy out there conspiracy theory. But it doesn't surprise me in the least either, because you know, these things also, you know, they look real, they look believable, they're well-crafted. We've actually had several clients contact us about these SMS text messages that they received, and a lot of them do look believable. We actually also started tracking, or trying to track, some of the domains that were used in these particular types of scams. And if you take a look at, you know, one of them, I think you mentioned, was m9sxv.info.
Oh, my God.
Emmanuel.
Of course. Yeah, that one. We're all familiar with that.
Yes.
That's M9 my homepage.
SXV. Yeah, there you go. So what these guys are doing is pretty smart, too. I mean, they generally will always start with M and then a number. And then something, you know, and then usually S, right? The last two numbers change. It make it kind of difficult because they do hop around a little bit in terms of this format.
Wait, you're saying there's an actual rhyme or reason to the random numbers and letters?
Yeah. Well, it makes it difficult to track because there's so much noise in the DNS when it comes to those letters. And the way that they're formatting this and the way that they're changing them, it is very tough to track and get a handle on these domains when they come out. But especially, and here's the interesting thing about these scams, they are always operating on the same day of the domain name registration. So if you take a look at M9SXV, as in Sierra X-ray Victor.info, that was registered on the 15th of September. They were using, and it's always using Namecheap as a registrar. And then very shortly thereafter, it was activated for use in these SMS phishing scams, the smishing scams, as we call them. Another one that was used and was active on September 7th was M5SMZ.info. That's Sierra Mary Zulu.info. And again, not surprisingly, that was also registered same day of September 7th with Namecheap. So they're making these really quickly and activating them very quickly.
So it's M followed by a number followed by three letters dot info. That seems to be the format.
Yeah, but here's the other interesting thing, too, that I noticed. I took a look inside the dot info zone file for the TLD, which includes all of the domains in dot info. You can still look these up, you know, by performing a whois. You know, if you go down your command line and terminal, for those of us that are, you know, not command line adept here, whois will tell you who owns a particular domain, when it was registered, when it expires.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Most of the time, people hide behind anonymity, and you can't tell who owns them. You used to be able to.
Privacy. That's true. It used to be, you used to be able to get much more information about who actually owns it, who's the actual owner.
Well, that's because they changed the standard, right?
They did quite a bit with GDPR, and they were masking quite a few different aspects of whois. But one of the aspects of whois that is not masked and has never been masked is the registrar and the creation date. This is not information that relates to people or personally identifying information. So you can always take a look at that. All of these have Namecheap as a registrar. All of these are registered the same day. So you can't mask that type of information. And we're actively looking out for these. I will say, though, but to go back to the original point, these domains don't appear to be located in the zone file for the .info TLD any longer, which means that, it seems to me like this has been pervasive and active enough for law enforcement, probably federal law enforcement, to get involved with the Internet Registry and make sure that these are removed on an expedited basis. It doesn't prevent them from being added on a daily basis, but when these are activated, I think there's a lot of swift action behind the scenes to get these domains taken down.
So when they're taken down, you're saying they no longer exist on the registrar. They don't still have their expiration date. They're just wiped out completely.
No, they do. You can still look them up in the whois, but the actual domains in the zone file, which would then have a name server that associated with it, and the name server will tell you where the IP address is, that seems to be gone. So those entries are gone, and they're gone really quickly. I have not been able to find them in the .info zone file, which contains all of the domains that are located in the .info top level domain.
Well, now it seems these that domains, you're able to detect this by the predictable behavior. They register through the same registrar, and they're active within a day. What if they simply randomized the registrar they used and waited a couple of days before they started doing anything?
That would make it more difficult.
All right, I'm sorry for giving that tip out to them, but I mean, they're going to figure it out on their own.
Yeah, that's right. But even monitoring for these types of registrations on a daily basis are very, very tricky, because you're going to get a hell of a lot of false positives when it comes to M whatever in the DNS. There's just so much activity on that front.
But why M? Is there a reason why they only begin with M?
You would have to ask them, Emmanuel.
Okay,
I don't know.
I'm asking them now. They could listen to the radio show. Please write to us, OTH@2600.com, and ask and answer. Let us know why. Maybe it's a program that they haven't figured out how to move to the next letter.
Also, if you're interested in remaining anonymous, go to 2600.com/securedrop for information on how to contact us anonymously.
Yeah, well, if you want to leak something to us, such as, I don't know, tax returns of various people or memos or even videos, audio, all kinds of things. It's all possible.
You can submit articles too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can communicate with us without us knowing who you are. 2600.com/securedrop. All the instructions are there. You'll need the Tor browser when you actually submit your material. But SecureDrop is an amazing way to transfer information securely. It's been used by media outlets throughout the world for a number of years, introduced at Hope, by the way. And we're just so proud to be a part of that.
Yeah, one of the best tools for that around. So definitely take advantage of that if you're trying to get important stuff to us.
I want to thank Miguel, who writes to us using the hashtag #OffTheHook. I'm listening, but I still don't have a question. And okay, thank you, Miguel. That's all we asked. That somebody would just at least try the hashtag out and see if it works, and it does work. So now we can say that if people want to ask a question, they can, and if they don't, then they it's their choice. Hashtag. That's the pound sign, in case you don't know it, above the three on most keyboards. #OffTheHook, one word, and just type your question and include that, and it'll somehow get to us. Yep. Somebody was raising their hand. Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. I was signaling to my wife. I wasn't raising my hand.
You can't signal to your wife while you're on the radio, because you're signaling to us. It's hand signals are how we communicate.
I thought you said, I'm not your wife.
Oh, I'm here.
You can pass notes to her. That's
Do you want me to address this question that we got from Twitter?
Yeah, why don't you
what,
get
what question?
That
question? There's no question. Miguel had no question.
There's one more. Why don't you speak?
How come
to
I
that?
Don't see it?
I don't know. Rob told me on another communication platform, but
Rob,
go ahead,
Rob,
Alex.
Why don't I see this? How am I being excluded from this?
He's using a Skype chat. So.
You got a square.
I'm sorry. What?
I'm monitoring the hashtag #OffTheHook that you gave, and in addition to it being used in a couple of unrelated contexts, because that phrase does exist elsewhere, there has been a question submitted to us.
Indeed.
And I don't see it. That's weird. So that just proves that Twitter doesn't work, because if you can see it and I can't, that's weird. Okay, go ahead. What's the question?
I'll read the question. Twitter question. I seem to be out of the loop, but why are you backing TikTok? They have a history of privacy, censorship, and anti-LGBT actions. And look, I very much welcome a question like this, and I think a lot of this comes from misconceptions of not only TikTok but also our own U.S. companies here, and the criticism that's been levied at TikTok. Is number one, not the U.S. operation of TikTok, which is TikTok U.S., but it relates to how these platforms operate in China, namely censoring anti-governmental statements or censoring things about Uyghurs has been a lot of criticism that's been levied over at TikTok. But what's important to note here, too, is that it's not just TikTok that is operating, and I wouldn't even say it's TikTok, because TikTok doesn't actually operate in China. There's a different type of platform that operates specifically in China. TikTok itself is for the rest of the world. There's something very specific that operates in China.
Okay, whoever has the Mac, please knock it off. Thank you.
I know. Sorry about that. That was me. It's just things never stop here. But the point that I want to make here, and I think this is a really important point, because, you know, and perhaps to an extent I was guilty of this as well, you know, that you, when you associate TikTok, especially with China, there's a lot of anti-Chinese sentiment that goes along with those types of feelings that you have. And any company, Google, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, anybody who's doing business in China has to comply with all the local applicable Chinese rules. If you're doing business in Indonesia, it becomes very difficult for you to allow anything on your platform that criticizes the king and the monarchy. So all of these weird wrinkles and local rules that go along with doing business in a global sense can be levied as criticisms at any one of these companies, whether it's Google, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Viber, Signal, whatever it is, you know, everybody has to engage in this type of behavior if they want access to the Chinese market. Otherwise, they will be kicked out. And to an extent, you know, Google was on the short end of the stick when it came to China for quite a while, and they moved a bunch of operations over to Hong Kong. So I think that this is a thorny issue, not just for ByteDance, which is, you know, the parent company of TikTok. And Douyin is the version of the platform that operates in China. But I think these are questions that we need to be asking, not only of TikTok, because it originates in China, but of every single major platform that's out there. You know, what are you doing? What are they doing? Just because they are homegrown American companies doesn't mean that they're embodying homegrown American ideals once they leave our borders.
And it's a really alluring and substantial market. So those companies are absolutely calculating it, and to wholly avoid it over principles is probably a disservice to shareholders' expectations. And so they're going to have to make some sort of concessions.
I think also part of why this is a big deal for me is that outside of TikTok, just the very idea that the president has the power to stand up and say this app should be banned, or this, you know, private business shouldn't operate. Like, if they're doing something wrong, there are ways and processes to investigate them, punish them for that, whatever. But if we're living in the sort of environment where one person can just stand up and say that should be banned, and then it's banned, like, that's dangerous. And so I think if TikTok were left to twitch in the wind when the president did that, like, that would set a very dangerous precedent for other apps that maybe aren't guilty of things, but just the president doesn't like.
Right. And like you said, bad precedent, all that kind of thing. And I think many times we see social media as the root of the problem, and in many cases, I think it is. Look at all the issues that Facebook causes with misinformation. I have an example for you here. We have the fires burning out west. In fact, you guys enjoy the smoke? It's now here. Alex, have you gotten this? You're in Pennsylvania, right?
I am indeed.
Did you get any smoke in the air?
You know, it's hard to determine whether or not, you know, we're seeing something. We must be able to see something. It has been a little bit hazy.
Hazy, that's the smoke.
And it does.
That is the smoke. If you're getting haze, that is the smoke. And we're getting it here in New York.
Can you smell this, the smoke? Because I do smell a lot of smoke when I go outside, but people are generally starting fires now. I mean, inside their house and fireplaces, you know, not sort of self-arson type stuff. But, you know, it's that time of year where people are lighting up logs in their fireplace. So it's hard for me to distinguish. But if you remember back in the winter, you know, when we were still in the studio, we were talking about social media platforms spreading misinformation about the wildfires in Australia.
Right.
And that seemed it was a proving ground for what's happening now. I mean, it's a happy coincidence for the disinformation players, I guess, that the seasons are reversed and they can use Australia essentially as a proving ground. But, well, you know, we're seeing the same thing now.
Basically, what's happening with Facebook concerning these fires is that people are frequently posting about forming patrols to look for looters, or worse, Antifa. Yeah, they're the latest boogeymen, which, according to this article from NPR, they're a loosely defined leftist group that is a frequent focus of far-right conspiracy theorists who are a lot better organized, I can tell you that. One person speculated in a private Facebook group, has anyone seen or heard of three guys with hoodies throwing bottles of gasoline in the Boring golf course? Boring being a town of in Oregon. I don't know if it's true, so I'm asking here if anyone knows. Isn't that great? Facebook, you can just come up with a wild scenario and say, has anyone heard of this? I don't know if it's true, just asking. And it becomes true because you said that. Now, it's happened in recent months in response to protests for racial justice. Vigilante groups have turned out in various communities to ward off unsubstantiated threats from anti-fascist protesters. One such patrol, a group of armed men, stopped an Oregon public broadcasting reporter in the Clackamas County community of Malala on Thursday and told him to leave immediately. Yeah, that's not a Facebook post. That actually happened because you have a reporter that can document it. Law enforcement officials said they have seen no evidence of Antifa or any other vigilante groups starting fires. Okay, first of all, let me correct you, NPR. Antifa is not a vigilante group. Antifa is a concept. It's not an organized group of people like these militia goons that are going around with guns intimidating people. It's very, very different. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office in Southern Oregon took to Facebook this week to knock down rumors about six Antifa members being arrested for setting fires. Here's the post. This is not true, all caps. Unfortunately, people are spreading this rumor, and it is causing problems. Rumors spread just like wildfire, and now our 911 dispatchers and professional staff are being overrun with requests for information and inquiries on an untrue rumor. Ashland Police Chief Tiga Almira said the investigations involve not only the setting of the fire, but also the death of someone immediately after the fire. So there is an investigation going on. It's a criminal investigation. It's ongoing. But there's no connection between his investigation and any political organization or social justice group or movement. In no way does it point towards any political group, including anybody associated with Antifa. Any rumors suggesting that it is pointed toward Antifa are entirely fabricated. There's no reason to believe that this is politically motivated. Okay, here's where I have to disagree. While you're saying that, yeah, there's no indication that the fires are politically motivated, these posts most definitely are politically motivated because they are being posted by people that know what they're doing and that are trying to demonize those people they disagree with and have them hunted down like animals. So it's very definitely some political action of a very low class that's going on here. Go ahead, Rob. Rob, you're muted.
Rob, I'm muted.
Okay, I don't think he knows he's muted. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. Sorry about
you're
that.
You're not muted now.
We just got an interesting comment from on the hashtag Off the Hook on Twitter. Someone writes, someone called Moss writes, the last time I remember getting air quality warnings in New Jersey from issues in the Pacific Northwest was the Mount St. Helens eruption.
So, totally, yeah.
That was 1980, I believe. So, wow, that is something. And yeah, the air quality was dangerous for everybody. We were watching Seattle news. They were commenting on how nice the sunsets look now because of the smoke. Yeah, I guess you have to look for the silver lining in all the clouds that surround you. But what are we going to do about Facebook and Twitter and all these social media outlets that basically, I mean, Twitter is labeling Trump's falsehoods as manipulated media. He just posted something or retweeted a video with music that appeared to show Joe Biden dancing to F the police. Yeah, the anti-police anthem. Obviously, that's not true, but people don't know it. And Twitter posts something that says manipulated media. But
wait,
that doesn't really do anything. It's a little tiny button, and you can still watch it, and it still can be retweeted. And, you know, they've done this in the past, And even if they are able to remove something after a long fight, it's been seen by millions of people. These actions are harmful. I mean, freedom of speech is something we all need to defend. But is this freedom of speech, or is this instigating all kinds of riots and hate speech and God knows what else? How do we fight back against it? Alex?
No, I think this, yeah, sure. This is a really difficult question. And one I think that the social media companies and all of the platforms themselves are woefully inequipped to deal with. Because we are asking them to do something that, number one, undermines their own business model. And this is the very real reason why Facebook has fought so hardly against doing any kind of fact-checking when it came to political advertisements, because they're in the business of selling political advertisements. Mm-hmm. And the more ads that they cannot sell, the less money they make. And you know, that should really go to show everybody who's on these damn platforms, including myself, that the real reason they exist is to make money and to commoditize you.
So in effect, we're sacrificing our democracy so they can make money. That's what it really boils down to.
Yeah, where the democracy, Emmanuel, I mean, let's get it straight here, is merely the collateral damage here. In a money-making, hand-over-fist enterprise like Facebook.
I would just interject, it's not money-making like in a vacuum purely for profit. Consider how much of that is stock buyback or reinvestment to further their power and domination, to acquire other companies. That happened with Instagram, that happened with WhatsApp. You know, that is not an innocent take that just goes to a bunch of pensions and shareholders' coffers.
We've been through this before. Us in the hacker community, we've seen this before. In the 1990s, we had something called IRC. We were all on it. And on IRC, people just spouted forth with whatever it is they wanted to say, and a lot of it was really, really stupid. But at the end of the day, you could always say, you know what, it's only IRC. I'm going to walk away from it, not going to take it seriously. And everybody understood that. We don't understand it now with these social media outlets, which are basically an extension of those early days of IRC. Everybody, your grandmother's on there, your uncle's on there, and they all are taking it seriously. So you have these internet trolls, and now you can no longer walk away from them because they're running a damn government, you know? So how do you defend against that?
Yeah, I mean, like that gets to exactly, I think, to the second point that I want to make here, which is that these platforms, in their defense, you know, and to present the other side of the story here, we are asking them to do something that is extraordinarily difficult, which is to regulate speech. I mean, our courts have been trying to figure out what are the various contours of speech and statements that go beyond, you know, the protections of the First Amendment. You know, what are fighting words? What is commercial speech? What is free speech? What is political speech? Religious speech? All of this is extraordinarily difficult, even for trained jurists to try to figure out. What we're asking of the social media platforms, because there is so much information being funneled through there, I mean, literally, you know, petabytes of information going through their networks every single day, is to look at this, figure out in a very quick manner using, you know, algorithms based on who knows how many ridiculous types of conditional if-then statements, and identify misinformation by making quasi-judicial determinations about the value and the semantic propositions included in speech. This is insanely difficult stuff to do. And when you're trying to do it at scale around the world, it just doesn't work. And when you have people that are not trained lawyers or jurists, and they're just on your trust and abuse team trying to make these determinations on the fly, it's super, super difficult. So, you know, I think we're in a bit of a pickle here. You know, and I think, however, just before Hope, you know, and this is part of what I included in my Hope presentation, is that we did see some lawmakers reaching out to platforms and asking what it is they are doing on their own platforms to combat misinformation. And, you know, I could see combating misinformation being embodied in some kind of legal requirement and itself becoming a compliance issue, just like handling personally identifying information is. I think that's where we're headed, and I think we're headed towards some form of content platform or mediator liability here, for, you know, failing to regulate in some reasonable manner hate speech or misinformation, or let's say you turn a blind eye to something like that, there's got to be some kind of liability there for these platforms, because to do nothing at this point when we know what the consequences are is nothing short of negligence.
Yeah, well, you know, I grow faint when you say liability, because I think of legal courtrooms and things like that. But, you know, I think common sense, that's what we really need to practice now, and not take things that we see on social media as if it's the same thing as the actual news, as the actual truth that we know with our own eyes. And just assume that you're being lied to, just like you should always assume you're being lied to when somebody tells you something. Investigate on your own. Find out the facts. And we're just not doing enough of that. Hey, we're pretty much out of time. Any closing remarks from anybody before we sign off for the night?
Just keep reexamining the sources of the information you get, whether it's social media or whether it's your ornery relatives over a holiday dinner table. It's always worth digging deep and finding out the actual data behind the stories that you're slinging around.
Go ahead, Alex, quickly.
But do wear a mask. Trust us when we say that.
Yes. Kyle?
Definitely just wanted to say support community radio and stations like WBAI and hack. Get out there and build stuff, break stuff, mix it up, and share what you learn.
And vote science. Good night.
In there, vote them out. That's what election day is all about. The biggest gun we got is called the ballot box. So if you don't like who's in there, start that show again. And if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. If it's a bunch of clowns, you vote it in. Election day is coming round again. If you don't like it now, if it's more than you'll allow. If you don't like who's in there,
broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out and move mountains. We're gonna walk it out, move mountains. And our eyes like the day, our eyes unafraid, our eyes up. And I do it a thousand times again.
100-day with Rise Up, and that's what New Yorkers are doing in this pandemic and what WBAI continues to do as a community radio station, a vehicle for change. And to continue to broadcast WBAI listener-sponsored, WBAI needs your support. And as Governor Cuomo has said, to continue to stop the spread of COVID-19, New Yorkers must wear a face mask. So we've created a WBAI face mask with our logo and a message that reads, "Keep Free Speech Radio Alive." Support WBAI by donating $35. Receive the WBAI face mask in white or black. You can go to give2wbai.org to see how they look. And you can donate right there on the site for one or two of them. These face masks are 100% cotton. They're made in the U.S. for general everyday use while out in public when social distancing measures are difficult to maintain. Please call 516-620-3602. Ask for a WBAI face mask. It's a contribution of $35 to WBAI. It makes you a member of this radio station for a full year. And you can get a face mask in white or black. Again, 516-620-3602. And we thank you so much for your support.
This Thursday, September 17th at 10 p.m. on Folk Radio, we take another deep dive into Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music, an iconic collection of 84 songs which were recorded in the late 20s and early 30s, largely forgotten long before they were re-released by Folkways Records in 1952 on the new LP format. And that introduced new generations to them and played a key role in launching the folk music revival of the 50s and 60s. On Folk Radio, this Thursday, 10 p.m. to midnight on WBAI and streaming at WBAI.org.
Greetings and salutations. This is Giovanni Anglin.
And I'm Bastian Nissa.
And we're here to announce the return of our show, Black Seinfeld, on WBAI with a new day, new time, but the same BS for Black Seinfeld.
Along with intern Mike, you could catch us live on Thursday from midnight to 2 a.m.
You know what, Bash? Our tagline is that this is the show about nothing, but it's more than that, right?
That's true. Our conversations could be political, but also comical. We're really just giving our point of view on how we see the world and how it affects us today.
So join us Thursdays at midnight, BAI listeners, only on 99.5 FM, WBAI New York.
WBAI, WBAI, WBAI New York, New York.
We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
Welcome. This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, and this is Exploration. Every week on Exploration, we discuss the fascinating world of science and its impact on society. And today, leading off, we're going to summarize some of the top stories of the past week. Our lead story today, of course, talks about the massive fires engulfing the west coast of the United States. Over 3 million acres are burning pretty much out of control. We're witnessing forest fires of historic proportions, not seen in human history. And the question is, why? Why do we have these gigantic fires burning out of control in California and Oregon? Why? And then we'll say a few things about the coronavirus. The vaccine that is leading the charge is being developed at Oxford University, but tests were temporarily halted because one individual developed serious neurological problems. Since then, tests have resumed. But the question is that good news or bad news when a vaccination trial results in a serious side effect? And speaking about side effects, children are going back to school. Many parents believe that children, especially those under the age of 10, are pretty much immune to the virus, but that's not true. The latest results show that, yes, children, even children as young as 1 year of age, can in fact spread the coronavirus even if they are asymptomatic. And so you have to think twice. And again, the numbers are small, but non-negligible, and scientists have been able to document the fact that children are not necessarily invulnerable to the virus. And also, talking about the weather, what was it like, the weather, during the time of the dinosaurs compared to now? Previously, it was thought to be impossible to recreate the atmosphere of the dinosaurs, but that's no longer true. There's a new way scientists have used to measure the temperature, the atmospheric content of the early atmosphere going all the way back to the time of the dinosaurs. And the question is, what have we learned from this incredible insight? Well, let's just jump right into the top stories of the past week. Our lead story today concerns the West Coast. You know, California used to be called the future. You want to see the future? Look at California. With bustling suburbs, easygoing lifestyle, massive freeways, and the freedom to travel anywhere you want. Well, there was a fly in the ointment. Yeah, we hit a speed bump. And that speed bump is, well, not earthquakes. It is giant forest fires on a scale not seen in recorded history. Right now, tens of thousands of people are being evacuated in Oregon. Evacuations may eventually reach 500,000 people. The smoke is so bad, it's clearly visible from outer space. It's a health hazard. It's worsening lung problems because the smoke is so thick and dense. And this is the worst in recorded history. But the question is, why? Why all of a sudden do we have this tinderbox called California, Oregon, the West Coast? Why is it that right now we have more area being burned than 26 times the area burned just last year? Overwhelming firefighters. Why? Well, you can point your finger at one main cause, but there are several secondary causes. The main cause is human activity and human development. So let's list the reason why we have this perfect storm of fire. First of all, overdevelopment. As the population, especially in California, surges, populations are spreading into forest areas. Why is that? Because, well, people are fleeing the pollution and the congestion of the cities, and forest areas can be cut down, generating tremendous profits for developers. And so that's the first reason why we have this problem. We are encroaching upon Mother Nature. Second of all, as we do so, there was failure to clear the excess brush and tinder. In fact, the policy of fire prevention has always been the opposite. Put out fires as soon as they're found. In other words, don't let nature take its course. Well, the result of that is that there's a lot of unnatural brush and tinder out there stored up over many a decade because minor forest fires were extinguished as soon as they formed. And what does that mean? That means more forest fires. Third, we also have the weather. It's been unusually dry this summer. The winters have been wet, giving ideal conditions for overgrowth. We have high winds that are feeding the forest fires and low humidity. All of that gives you a perfect storm for a forest fire. But then on top of all that, we have global warming. Temperatures are rising. Summertime is, on average, about a week longer than normal. And that, of course, feeds into the forest fires. So what do we do about it? Well, first of all, we have to have new codes and regulations, especially as people leave the cities and move into the forest, clearing area of brush and tinder. Sometimes we have to let nature take its course. So we have to transition to a sustainable energy policy as we develop areas like California. And there's a realization that there are limits to human activity. We cannot simply conquer nature because at some point, nature bites back. And so we are bumping up against nature's forces. And it's something to realize as we contemplate the future of California and the West Coast. Will we take into account conservation measures? Will we have smart development rather than chaotic development causing us to accumulate excess brush and tinder? Well, we'll see. Also, here's the latest news about the coronavirus. Leading the charge for a vaccination is the vaccine being tested at Oxford University, 18,000 people. That's right, 18,000 people so far have been tested. Eventually, about 30,000 people will be tested, but the trials were temporarily halted. One individual came down with a serious neurological complication, and the doctors panicked and stopped the trials. However, after a week of investigating this individual, they finally decided that the person probably was not directly related to an side effect of the vaccination, so they resumed the trial. So what's the lesson here? Is it good news or bad news that the trial was halted and then restarted? Well, the consensus among scientists is that it was actually good news because it means that we're erring on the cautious side. Anytime someone develops a side effect, immediately we want to see whether the side effect is due to the vaccination or due to a pre-existing condition, for example. Now, Russia and China have been criticized for rushing in. They are already giving their people their version of the vaccination for the coronavirus. In Russia, we now realize that they've tested less than 100 individuals. That's right. Eventually, they want to test up to 40,000 individuals. But already, Putin's daughter, they say, has gotten vaccinated. But it means that some people think that the Russians are rushing the vaccine. Now, what about the United States? As we mentioned, in the United Kingdom, 18,000 people have already been tested for the Oxford vaccination. In the United States, we have two vaccines being tested. Each one will target 30,000 individuals in phase three. So by the time phase three trials are over, we could have, believe it or not, 90,000 people that have been tested for the vaccine. So when will it be available? That, of course, is the $64,000 question. Perhaps as early as November. Most people shake their heads and say, well, December, January. And of course, it's going to be quite chaotic as to who gets the vaccination first. Most people agree that medical workers, nurses, doctors, the people that put their lives on the front line to save all of us, they should be first in line to get vaccinated. Second, the most vulnerable. That means the elderly, people over 65, people with underlying conditions, because they represent overwhelmingly the largest number of people that have come down with the virus, especially, for example, people who suffer obesity, also lung problems, kidney problems, underlying conditions. Next, people in poor areas that are heavily impacted by the virus. But hey, it's politics, of course, because we are entering a political season. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what's going to happen as vaccinations become more popular. Now, we should also point out that children are going back to school. And of course, we all heard about what happens when teenagers and college students go back. They go back to their partying lifestyle. They think they live forever. Especially fraternities and sororities are being hit very hard because there's a misconception that young people are invulnerable. Now, it's true that the bulk of cases has concentrated with the elderly. But that doesn't mean that people of college age and younger are invulnerable to the virus. No, they now represent the fastest growing segment of the population that's been exposed to the virus. Now, the new result is that children, in fact, a child as young as 1 year of age, we now realize that they can spread the virus, especially to their parents, grandparents, caretakers. So this was kind of a shock. Scientists thought that, well, for the most part, the younger you are, the more invulnerable you are to the virus. But now we realize that, no, you can have children who are asymptomatic, who look perfectly normal, but can spread the virus to their home. So